to the Veterinary Financial Podcast, where we discuss financial freedom and professional success. I'm Meredith Jones, a veterinarian and financial planner for vets. Our guest today is Anna Foster. She's an emergency veterinarian and the co-founder of the Evolved Vets, which helps vets evolve their careers and lives. Anna, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Meredith, for having me. I have been a fan of this podcast for years, and it's an honor as your friend to be here as well.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on. So you have a Substack that is called Dr. Anna Foster Travel Vet, where you've been talking all about your 3-month sabbatical. I'd love to hear just more about that. And why did you decide to take a sabbatical?
About a month ago, I started a Substack. And for those of you who don't know what Substack is, it's a blog. And it's kind of a newer, maybe like up and coming form of social media that I think people are particularly interested in because it's real. There's a little bit more connection there versus if you think of like Instagram where you have just photos and it's a little bit more curated. When you read a blog from somebody, that is their thoughts and you get it real, you get it raw, and it's just a little bit more relatable. And so I felt like I had some things that I wanted to share. I had some thoughts that I wanted to clarify for myself and just explore. And so I started this Substack for fun. The point of it is it's a lot of musings about a life well lived, particularly in veterinary medicine. So I'm a veterinarian. I also have for years just been this self-development junkie. And so I've been reading books, going to seminars, working with coaches, all of those things to be able to learn and kind of apply that to vet med. So backing up, when I was in vet school, I became obsessed with the question, why aren't vets happy? I saw it all around me, anywhere that I would do an externship at, work at, and this was mostly in small animal clinics, veterinarians were not happy. And we can dive into all of those reasons later, but I became obsessed with that question and it has got me to different places in my career where I've been able to play a role in trying to make the workplace better for veterinarians and therefore pets and also clients as well. So I took a sabbatical for a number of reasons. I'll go a little bit just high level through my history, but since I graduated, I have had hybrid roles, meaning I've worked on the business and in the business as a veterinarian. And my most recent role, I was chief of staff to the CEO and founder at Veterinary Emergency Group, VEG. That was for David Bessler. He is one of my heroes, and I still call him a close friend and mentor. And it was really the job of a lifetime. It was such a highlight being able to go from 10 hospitals to 100 hospitals working side by side with him and all that I learned and was able to contribute. I'm from Texas. I had moved to New York for the job. I also brought my husband with me and we were starting to get an itch to start a family. And so we recently moved back to Texas and I was really just kind of like, what do I do now? You know, the headquarters for VEG is in New York. I can't work there. We want to be back in Texas. So what am I going to do? And I am now a travel ER doctor for VEG. So that's my full-time job. I work 10 shifts a month and I'm licensed in about 13 states, can go all around and work in those different states and pick up shifts. And I love that. I'm a travel junkie. And so I'm obsessed with that job. And also I started a business with one of my best friends, Bethany Weinheimer. She's another veterinarian. And we started the Evolved Vets, which I'll get into a little bit later. But the combination of starting this business, changing roles from being at headquarters full-time to now back on the floor as an ER veterinarian, it was a lot of change all at once. And I found myself desiring a pause to kind of reset and be like, okay, what do I want in this phase of my life? I went through undergrad and then vet school and then straight into jobs and was a little bit of a workaholic, like many of us are. And I knew I needed a pause. So I started working with a coach and we started thinking about, okay, well, what do you want? And I kind of had always had this idea of like, I wanted to take time off before I have kids to travel the world, to see things and just have a little bit of time off to kind of like enjoy everything adulthood before kids come into the picture. Also have always wanted to live in Hawaii. I've been traveling here since I was little. My parents have a place here. And so it made it really easy when me and my husband started planning that we wanted to spend some time in Hawaii, just try out a different lifestyle from here. So I started planning about a year ago, and there were many hoops that I needed to jump through to be able to do a sabbatical. So I'm happy to get into those. But a lot of it for me of why I wanted to do a sabbatical or take time off was because I wasn't lit up by my work anymore. I've always been someone who is passionate about my work. I throw, you know, 150% of my energy into my work. And I found myself not burnt out, but just exhausted and not lit up. And so I really wanted to have a reset and figure out what are my values now? And, you know, what do I want to do moving forward? Because I do want to get back into a place where I'm really lit up and inspired by my work.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so what were some of those hoops that you had to jump through to be able to take the sabbatical?
There's a really great article about sabbaticals that inspired me. There's an HBR article. I don't remember the title of it, but it's something about sabbaticals and it's linked in my Substack. There are a couple of things. So the three things I'll talk about when it comes to planning for a sabbatical, there's finances, there's responsibility, and then there's perception. And so if we talk finances, because this is the Veterinary Financial Podcast, because we started planning in advance, me and my husband is also a financial planner for vets, so small world here, and he helped me to be able to plan this. We decided how long we wanted to take off and decided that 3 months was a good amount to where we would get that feeling of being able to have time and space and reflection without feeling too rushed, but also not so long that it was maybe unmanageable. And so we planned for 3 months, and I'm technically taking 2 months off work. I worked all my shifts in July at the beginning of the month, and then I'll work all my shifts for October at the end of the month. So it's really just August and September that I'm full-time off, but it ends up being about 3 months, which is really nice. I follow something called values-based living, and that is incorporated into my finances as well. So some of you may be familiar with Ramit Shetty. He is this finance guru, and his work is really accessible. But he has this saying that is, spend lavishly on what you love and save ruthlessly on what you don't. And so to be able to do a sabbatical and travel around, we made some sacrifices. So my husband and I, we moved back into our one-bedroom condo in Houston, which has a mortgage of like less than $500 a month. It's tiny, tiny. And so our expenses are very low on that versus buying a bigger home. I also drive a 15-year-old car, so I haven't had a car payment in a very long time. And those are two expensive things, your home and your car. And then we also don't have kids right now. So we're a dual income, no kids, and we have some money to be able to spend on this because of the things that we value. And so saving money on those things and being able to budget, you know, how much money are we going to need during this time? Also, I mentioned my parents have a place here in Hawaii, so we have a place to stay. And that helped a ton as well. But we planned for those finances, and my husband is still working during this time. He just needs a laptop to work, so he's able to continue working during this time, but he has a lot of flexibility, which is awesome. So finances, that's what we did. And then the next step is responsibility. And so you have to ask yourself, if you want to take a break from work, then you need to think about what your responsibilities are. You don't want to leave anyone high and dry or put someone in a pickle because you decided to up and take a few months off. So when I was thinking about responsibility, this sabbatical is not something I could have done in my previous role. I knew that I needed to change roles. And I knew that I couldn't commit to working as an ER doctor full-time in Houston, where I'm from, because I would leave that team in a pickle if I left for a few months. So for that reason and other reasons, I joined the travel team. So on the travel team, I'm basically like a relief doctor. I'm extra. I can come in and save the day when they need help. But if I'm not there, nobody's in a pickle. So that was a really big part of it, so that I wasn't leaving behind a lot of work. So I would consider that. I think if other veterinarians are interested in doing something like this, a great time is doing it in between jobs as well. So if you have the opportunity, you know that maybe you're leaving a job and you want to start another job, then try to extend that time as much as possible. So that would be a great time to do it. And then the last part was perception. So there were a lot of feelings when I started thinking about a sabbatical that I would be judged for being self-indulgent or not serious about my work, lazy, all those things. And so those are real fears that came up. I take a lot of pride in my work. I love working and I've always been very ambitious and determined, but I know that a sabbatical might not make sense to a lot of people. And I've had some pushback. So I did need to kind of get over that hurdle. And I think working with my coach, she was able to hold space for me and kind of be this vision holder of like, hey, if this is authentic to you, if it aligns with your values, and you know you need this space, take it. You need breaks in life, right? Like we take naps for a reason, or we have weekends for a reason. We have summers when we're growing up off for a reason. And if you need a break, take it. And if you're a veterinarian who is maybe in burnout, or you're starting to take some steps, like you feel like you might be headed towards burnout, then why leave the industry altogether if maybe you could take a break first and figure that out? Or if you're not happy in your work, you don't have to be burnt out. But if something's not right in your life and you could take a little bit of a break to reflect and reconnect, then by all means, do that.
Yeah. And I appreciate that you went through, practical ways that vets could do it, right? Because it's like, okay, you could plan this as a relief vet. So it's one way to do it. Or it could be joining a travel team like you did, with a company, or between jobs, or between roles. And you know, some people are transitioning from, kind of like you did, like one sort of role in vet med into another role. And so kind of in between that transition too. So that's really cool. And I love that you mentioned Rob Meat Sati, because I also I also really appreciate what he teaches, and I talk about him when I do presentations sometimes. So that's awesome. So let's get into, because of course you talked about burnout, and there are lots of different things in vet med that I think contribute to burnout. And we've both worked as ER doctors, and there was a quote from one of your posts that really stood out to me. You said, "I suppressed my emotions at work to get through the shift. Then by the end of the shift, I only want to disconnect from work. The chronicity of this happening takes a toll." And I just really identified with that, because that was me as an emergency doctor. And I'm sure it happens in other areas of vet med too, but could you speak more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that was relatable. So as I went back into practice full time, I was very curious. I was a little bit nervous for myself. I was most nervous going back to the medicine. I was like, oh my God, am I gonna know how to do this surgery? Like, am I gonna be able to handle when hits the fan and there's 10 triages that walk in within 1 hour? I was pretty worried about that stuff. But I was also just curious of like, how are the doctors on the floor doing? Is this a sustainable job? And very specifically, this was to ER, because I'm going back to ER. I've just been really curious and observant as I have practiced these past few months. And I also got a therapist too, when I moved back to Houston, just kind of like help with the transition. And I remember going into her office after a string of overnights. She was just kind of like asking about it. She was like, oh, that your job sounds pretty hard. Like, it sounds like that's a lot. And I was like, yeah, it's a lot, but you know, it's fine. And yeah, she just helped me uncover that, because I think I had a lot of euthanasias and just tough cases on a shift before that. And she was like, well, can you express your emotions at work? And I was like, yeah, actually, like veg is great about, you know, like, of course you can share your emotions. Those will be, people can relate. Like, we're very empathetic with each other. I work with a team of almost all women, and we're very supportive of each other. And yeah, I can cry for sure. And I have cried on shifts. But when I'm working and, you know, I'm seeing 20, 30 cases a shift, and there's several euthanasias, or there's some of those more complex cases, or ones that you try to save, but you can't. And there's a lot of really hard conversations. I want to cry a lot of times, especially the more emotionally invested I am. If I've been working with these people for a while, like I get attached too. Like, I'm human. We're all human. I think all vets feel that way. But I need to bite my tongue, because if I start to cry, which I have done, then, you know, my face is all red, like I have mascara coming down, you know, with tears, and I have a room full of other people that are waiting on me. And it's just inconvenient, right? It's like not worth me breaking down. Like there's times I can't control it, but it's not worth me breaking down. And so I bite my tongue and I go, you know, that's really sad. We're doing the best thing for the pet. I'm here for the people, but I've got to move on. And so you do that multiple times throughout the shift, say like 4 to 6 times a shift. That's probably like how many super sad cases there are. Then you get to the end of the shift and you're like, da 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 da, let me type in my notes, blah, blah, blah. I want to get out of here. I want to go to sleep, because you just work 12, 13, 14 hours. Then at that point, the emotion's not as fresh for me, because I've already kind of like bit my tongue, swallowed it, like it's gone. And so when you do that over and over again, multiple times a shift, several shifts, those emotions are getting buried somewhere. And so you do need to process them. And just that chronicity it makes the job really, really hard. And there are ways to deal with that. At the Evolved Vets, we've created a meditation called Shift Shedding, and that's free for anybody. Anyone can download it, evolvevets.com/shift-shedding. And it's meant for you to be able to put in some earphones or play it on your car radio when you're driving home. It's a 10-minute meditation, and it's all about letting go of that stuff, like letting go of the hard cases, letting go of the sad cases, maybe the surgeries where you're like, did I do enough? Like, should I have done an RNA? Should I not have? Like, I don't know. Is this pet going to survive? Did I have clear enough expectations with an owner? So it helps you just shed that and be like, you know what, you did your best. You were present. You did the best with the resources that you had. You were the best option for that person. But like, it's time to go home and like focus on other things so that you're not taking work home with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I certainly have experienced all of that, everything you just went through. And the other thing too is, I think even though, yes, it's okay to express your feelings and there's a culture that supports that to an extent, it's reserved for certain times when you're sort of allowed to express that. And people don't really talk about that, right? There's a lot of like, oh, this doctor is really a trooper, and a trooper means that you pushed it all down the whole shift. You know, and that's encouraged. And that's like, oh, she did such a great job. You've probably heard that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like, it's easy to, especially in ER medicine, be like I found myself doing this on many shifts. Oh, I just handled like all of those cases. It was so busy, but like I did it, or I had, you know, all the sad stuff I pushed through, or I had like a human faint one of my last shifts, and like the EMS had to come and stuff. And you get caught up in like all of the things that you're able to handle. And a lot of those things are like very heroic things. We do really badass things, but I think we have to be careful not to get too closely identified with that, where we are maybe not as in touch with our humanness and emotions. And no matter how strong or tough you are, like, you're doing hard things every day. There's nobody who it just doesn't affect.
Yeah. And I'm sure that that's something that for ER doctors in particular is one of the things that probably contributes to that, you know, typical like 3 to 5 year time frame that a vet is able to work ER. And then, of course, there's, you know, some of us who did it for 12 years or did it, you know, for longer, but...
What are your secrets, Meredith?
Oh gosh, yeah, I don't know if I'm in a position anymore to say, right? So, because now I've transitioned my own career. So.
Yeah. It's tough. Do it while you can. But if you're noticing that you're burnt out, or anyone who's listening, if it's not for you anymore, switch. And I will say that here in Hawaii, I'm licensed here in Hawaii too. So I did, I worked GP, and after working ER for the last few months, or basically this entire year, I did the GP shift. It felt so luxurious to have a lunch break. Like, my husband came and met me at the coffee shop next door. I was like, what do I do with this hour? Like, what? And then I was done at 5 and had time to cook dinner and eat dinner with my family. And that's something special, you know, like I think we should celebrate more. It's important to have that time with people. And it's okay if that's something that you want as a veterinarian. You know, you don't have to be the hero all the time. Like, you can want a lunch break.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And even on ER, I mean, I took lunch breaks, but I actually had a technician when I was working at Veg say to me, I've never seen a doctor take a lunch break before. It's like, oh my gosh. Like,
we don't. It's like, what kind of food can you bring that you can hold in your hand and like eat at the same time that you're like doing other things?
Yeah, like the various
not healthy
bars, not conducive, and things. Yeah, exactly. So one of the things, and this was interesting, and it showed up in a few different posts, is you were talking about technology and your sort of struggle with kind of detoxing from technology. And can you talk about that and that struggle and what worked for you?
Oh, yeah. Technology is in all of our lives, whether you're me and Meredith, who work on a computer a lot and have virtual businesses, or if you're just have a phone and maybe you're on social media, or maybe you're playing games, texting people, calling people. We're on our phones a lot, and it shapes our behavior, and it might not be totally conscious. And so what I did was, here in Hawaii, me and my husband, we went to another island, and we went to this like wellness resort, and I decided, okay, it's like wellness focused. I'm just going to like put my phone away and not check it. I gave myself a little bit of freedom. I wasn't totally crazy. I was like, okay, I'll have like maybe 10 minutes twice a day that if I need to like check texts or call somebody, call my mom, I can. But otherwise put it in a corner and like didn't take it with me anywhere. Now, my husband still had his phone, so I could use his phone to take pictures or videos. Or I also texted my family and my business partner to let them know, hey, I'm doing a 3-day phone detox. If you need something, just text my husband. And so I felt a lot better doing that. And this was like over a weekend. So it's like nobody really needs me. But it felt better to be able to let people know I was doing that. So I didn't have my phone for 3 days. So I'd like go to dinners without my phone. I would go to the gym without my phone, without music. I would go on walks without listening to a podcast. And what I learned, even after 24 hours, it was life-changing. It's just 24 hours. That's all you need to do. If you can do that one day a week, it's life-changing, because I would be reading a book and I could just like focus totally on the book. Otherwise I felt when I would open the book, I'd see something and be like, oh, I want to go look that up on ChatGPT. And well, I didn't have my phone. I couldn't do that. And so I was like, okay, keep reading. And just like little things that you don't realize that you just automatically grab your phone for. And then with my husband, I found that I was less irritable. I was less reactive, not saying that I'm irritable all the time, but there are many times that I'm on my phone, like doing something, sending a text or an email. And then he's like, hey, Anna, do you want to do blah, blah, blah? And I'm just like, give me a minute. That happens regularly. And so I wasn't doing that, which was really great. I could just be present, and things started to open up. So just when I would walk in the morning, I would notice more things. I would notice the smells and the perfumes of flowers around me. I'd see bright colors. I would notice the sky. I would hear birds chirping, like things that you maybe know are there, but I was able to appreciate it much more, not having my phone there, like with the urge to take out my phone and take a picture of that thing or look something up or just have your earphones in with music or a podcast. So that was great. And then I was less anxious. I knew that, you know, rather than texting somebody, waiting for them to text back or waiting for an email, I was just, no, there's nothing I can do with my business, with text messages, anything. Like, there's no news I'm going to get for these 3 days. And so I'm just going to be super present and enjoy what is. So those 3 days were magical and really eye-opening for me that I need to like physically leave my phone places. And so since then I haven't been perfect, but I've made some changes in my life. I sleep with my phone in another room. So it's charging in another room and I don't touch it for the first hour or so of waking up. And I do the same before I go to sleep. I put it away. And the few times that I've slipped and not done that, I like have bad dreams or I'm like, oh, I'm like, this thing upset me before I go to sleep or whatever, because your mind is most impressionable between wake and sleep. And so the time between when you are asleep and you're waking up and then when you are awake and going to sleep, like that's when things will kind of like stick in your subconscious a little bit more. So it's really important for me to be intentional about the information that I'm consuming during that time. So I will say that it was life-changing. There's little things that you can do in your life. Like even if you do have a partner and you're going out to dinner, take one phone. If you're going on a walk, take one phone instead of two and just see how you feel. Try it in small doses, but it's really freeing and it's really eye-opening about just how dependent we are on our phones.
Yeah, for sure. I remember a friend of mine in vet med who is older than I am, and she was saying, gosh, you know, I got on a plane with some vets who were younger than me. And she was like, it's a real hardship for them that they don't have their phone while they're on the plane. And she was explaining this and, you know, I mean, it's like, I don't have my phone. It doesn't bother me that much when I'm on a plane. I don't expect to have it, you know, but yeah, I never had thought of it like that. Like there's people who, you know, maybe that's the only time in their life that they're away from their phone.
Yeah, literally ever. It's like an extension of our body.
Yeah. Did you have an old school alarm clock or how did you wake up in the morning?
I'm very fortunate here in Hawaii that I basically wake up with the sunrise and I go to sleep really early. So there's nothing to do in Hawaii at night unless you're like stargazing. Yeah. So I'd go to sleep at like 8 or 9. So I'm waking up at 5, 6 a.m. And then if not by then, it's nice and bright by like 6:30. So I'm definitely awake. And the birds start chirping and it gets loud. So that's how I woke up. Now, if you have a job, that might be harder, but you can get, there is a really cool alarm. I think it's called Hatch. And it echoes kind of like nature sounds and it slowly illuminates your room. So that's probably something that I'll get at home just because it is like a huge cortisol dump if you have an alarm clock going off. Even when I'm home and I have shifts, I'll sleep with my phone in like the bathroom or something. And I downloaded a ringtone that's like the Nepal like singing bowls. So it's like very gentle. And then it goes off like in another room. And then I have to get up to go turn it off. So that's my pro tip.
Yeah, that's a good tip. I need this calmer ringtone for myself. Yeah. That's great. So this is kind of an extension of what we were just talking about. So there's another post on your Substack where you talked about your work life and how you've just been rushing from one thing to another and how it was hard not to just fall into the same sort of pattern during your sabbatical. And so you had a quote in there that said, "The antidote to rushing isn't slowing down, it's being present." And I just love that. And so can you talk more about just what that's been like for you, how things were before, how things kind of ran into rushing during your sabbatical, and then what do you see yourself doing after this sabbatical?
So since probably before vet school, I have always been like a multitasker and I am one of those people that fills every minute with something. So if I'm like watching TV, I'm also like maybe like on an exercise ball, like doing crunches. Or when I was in vet school studying, I would sign up for so many different externships and volunteer opportunities with horses, with exotics, with small animal, all the things. And then when I graduated, when I was doing those hybrid roles, I would always have this unlimited amount of work for the business side. And then I would be practicing, but then I also did low-cost spay neuter and vaccine clinics. And like, my time was always filled. And so same thing when I was chief of staff, if anyone's familiar with the chief of staff role or think like chief of staff to the president of the United States, like you're kind of just like this person's right hand and you are there 24/7. I worked for a 24/7 business. I worked for the founder who was obsessed with the business. We'd be on calls at 12 a.m. We'd be on flights across the country all the time. It was wild. And then I was like, okay, maybe when I, you know, I'm going to open my own business with Bethany, and this is going to be more of like a lifestyle business. It's going to be at our own pace. And then I'll be an ER doctor. And like when I'm off, I'm off. But then I started practicing and I'd like someone to be like, well, can you pick up an extra shift? And I was like, sure, I'll pick up an extra shift. What's one more shift? And I just filled my time again. And so I was like always busy. And I was like, oh my God, I think I'm the problem. And just still busy. So then I needed the sabbatical because I needed space to just kind of like come to terms with what's going on. And so I started the sabbatical, and then I just felt this urge to write every single day. I had all of these thoughts that were pouring out of me. So I wrote every day, Monday to Friday, for like the first month. And that writing, I really enjoyed it, but it took up to write a Substack, edit it, publish it, post about it on the internet, have a picture, all that. Like that probably took me 4 hours each day. Then I was also doing Evolved Vets work. And then I was like trying to adventure and see things on the island and hang out with my family who was here for a bit. And then I was like, wait, I'm taking a sabbatical, but like I'm still rushed. What is going on? So, you know, I would try to slow down and like that wasn't the answer. I didn't really know how to do that. And I think what I realized, and that this was with the help of a really amazing book that I read. I highly recommend this book to anybody. It was called 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mere Mortals. It's by Oliver Berkman. I had a couple of people recommend this because I'm in different like leadership and coaching groups. And I kept talking about my problem of rushing and like always feeling rushed. And they were like, you have to read this. And I was like, I have read every single time management book. Like, I'm not interested in reading another one. There's so many out there. And finally, I gave in and I read it, and it's completely different. It's not telling you how to manage your time. It's basically like, it is a myth that you can manage your time. Like you can't. That is a losing game. You can't do it. It also opened my eyes to the fact that a lot of high achievers, we are taught, and I would say veterinarians are all high achievers, we're taught to kind of like prolong any sort of like happiness so that we can get to some future state. It's like, I'll be happy when I get into vet school. I'll be happy when I graduate from vet school. I'll be happy when I get this job. I'll be happy when I get a promotion. I'll be happy when I get married. And he's like, it's bullshit. You need to be happy now. Like you choose happiness now. And so for me, there were so many great lessons in that book. But the biggest one was like, if there's something that you want now, like you have to prioritize it now. And so that helped me with really being present and saying like, okay, today, do I want to write a Substack and like pour my creative energies into that? Yeah, I do. And I understand the trade-offs that will come with that, because whatever you do choose, and if you're someone who gets FOMO like me, or if you're someone who's a maximizer like me, I wrote an article called Maximizers versus Satisficers. Check that out. You're constantly just looking for, you know, the next thing. And so you have to understand that whatever you choose, there's going to be trade-offs, and you can't always have your cake and eat it too. And so you just kind of like bust the myth that you can do it all, because you can't. So choose what's important now.
Oh, yeah. I love that. There's a lot to unpack there, because it's like, okay. And I was thinking about this too, because we recently interviewed Christine Statton from the Veterinary MBA, and she said something similar. So she was talking about how work-life balance is just unachievable. So it's similar to the losing game that you talk about in your posts and like you just talked about. And she talked about, okay, if I'm reading blood work on a beach, you know, and I'm oversimplifying it here, but she was talking about, it makes sense to be happy about that. I'm reading blood work on a beach. That's awesome. Instead of beating yourself up and thinking, okay, I'm supposed to be on vacation. I'm not supposed to be reading blood work, and making yourself unhappy.
I can totally relate to that. And you might have people around you, I have, who are like, what are you doing on your sabbatical working every day? What are you doing on your vacation working? But that's where you have to get really, really clear about what you personally value. Because if you know what you value, and like I know what I value, it's my values are travel and adventure, friends and family, self-care, and inspiring work. And if I can like combine all of those values and do a lot of them at once, which is like working from Hawaii on a beach, doing something inspiring, like with people I love, then I'm checking all those boxes for me. So success looks different for everybody. And if I had one piece of advice, it's get really crystal clear about what your values are, because only you can measure what success is for you.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right. So you've mentioned the Evolved Vets. And so can you tell us more about the Evolved Vets, what you and Bethany do, what you see yourselves providing in the future, and just what's your vision for the company?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So this is something that Bethany and I care about deeply. So the Evolved Vets is, in essence, it's a coaching platform for veterinarians. Bethany and I have felt really strongly about specifically women in vet med and just having the resources to thrive in the career, to be able to be happy outside of work, you know, live a life that's really authentic to you. We have hosted workshops in person. We have a membership, which we're really grateful that you're a member of, Meredith. And we have a podcast called The Evolved Vets. And so we talk about all of these topics of just things that women go through in veterinary medicine and how we can be empowered. So it's kind of, you know, we know veterinary medicine is hard, and there's a lot of other careers that are hard too, right? Like, we're not that special. Like, there's hard careers everywhere. But how can we empower ourselves so that as veterinarians and as women make up most of veterinary medicine, I think we're at 70% now, then how are we empowering ourselves so that we can create this industry that we love and that we're happy with and that's going in a direction that we're really proud of? And so there are a lot of skills that Bethany and I had to learn in and out of vet school. So we both went into leadership roles and desired, like, we wanted to be part of the industry and leadership since vet school. And so we kind of like did that really quickly out of school, learned a lot and failed a lot and, you know, tried things and kind of figured out what works. And then we got to this system that worked really well for us. And so we call it the Evolved Vets Method. A lot of it is focused on doing inner work, because your inner state reflects your outer life. And so we really believe that the transformation happens from the inside out. And in our coaching that we offer, there's two key components. One is it's values-based. And so anyone who works with us for one-on-one coaching, we're going to go through a values assessment. So you'll do different inquiries and self-assessments that help you discover what are your values. And from there, we know your North Star, your compass. And we figure out, okay, well, what are those gaps in alignment? And how do we get you to be taking actions to live more within what you value? Because if you're doing that, like, you're going to be more fulfilled. And so that might mean a job shift. It might mean just having better boundaries, might be taking up a hobby, might be focusing a little bit more on your life outside of vet med, might be applying for a promotion, whatever that is. And then the other part is called neuroplasticity. And so neuroplasticity is really just this belief that there's potential to change the way that your brain is patterned. That's something that's kind of a newer science, and we use it a lot in our work. And that's why we have different tools like meditations we've recorded, visualizations we've recorded, walking meditations. And these help you to really, at a more subconscious level, reprogram some of those limiting beliefs that you have. And it's completely changed my life of what I believe is possible for me. Over a year ago, I didn't think that a sabbatical was possible, for example. I didn't think I'd be able to be writing every day. I didn't think I'd have my own business. So it really unlocks something a little bit deeper. And so those are two things that make our coaching very unique. And we offer a membership, which is more self-paced, but then we also offer one-on-one coaching. And so that's what we're doing now. I don't know where it will go, but what I can say is that we have a lot of veterinarians reach out to us that they're just so glad that we're opening the door to some of these topics. And a lot of people follow along on the podcast. So anyone can listen for free at the Evolved Vets podcast. If you want to hire a coach, then we have a business. You can hire me as your coach, and think of it as life coaching for veterinarians. Everything's on the table when you think of life coaching. And I've had a few life coaches before. It's really that, how do we get your life to be in alignment with your values, whatever that means, whether you're a leader, you're an associate, whatever phase you're at, but you're looking to have a little bit more fulfillment in your life. And I've also written some Substacks on a coach versus a mentor. Mentorship is huge in veterinary medicine. I remember when I was graduating vet school, there were all these surveys done, and mentorship was the number one thing that people wanted out of a job. And I'd argue that mentorship is great, but there's often not accountability in mentorship. And so when you have a coach or you have a program, something like that, at least I personally need accountability. There's a lot in my life that I might not have done if I didn't have somebody holding me accountable, or I wasn't paying money to a coach, or I wasn't investing time in a program. The accountability piece matters. And so you can learn more about coaching versus programs versus therapy, and if you're interested in one of my Substacks.
Yeah, and I agree. Yeah, accountability is super important. And that's for, yeah, I mean, a lot of us need that to make sure we're keeping up on our workouts. And, yeah. You know, and it comes into play with financial planning as well. I mean, a lot of,
absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of my clients, you know, accountability is a big piece of why they're working with me. And so it's cool to see that overlap. And you guys, yeah, truly, yeah, have a ton of amazing resources within the membership, and then the podcast is fantastic as well. And so people should definitely check you guys out. So we know you've got the podcast, we know you've got Evolved Vets. If someone wants to get in touch with you directly, what is the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, the best way. So you can find me on Instagram at Dr. Anna Foster, one word, Dr. Anna Foster, DrAnnaFoster. That would be the best way to reach out to me directly. Just send me a message and happy to answer there. And then if you're interested in the Evolve Vets, it's just at Evolve Vets or evolvevets.com if you're interested in coaching. But I am happy to talk to anybody about sabbaticals, about coaching, about business and vet med, the industry, women in vet med, whatever you want to talk about. Those things light me up so much. And I love connecting with other people who care about these things too.
Well, this has been awesome. And so, of course, you have given some amazing advice throughout this conversation, but our last question is always the same. What is your best advice for our listeners?
I'm going to have to go with something related to values. So since this is a finance podcast, but also, you know, just about life and vet med in general, my advice is get crystal clear on your values, because everything else comes from that. Like what you spend money on, the job that you take, the partner that you marry, your hobbies, all of that comes from your values. And it might seem like, oh, let me just like go to a list and circle my values, and that's what it is. But it's really not that easy. It's taken me years to get clear on my values. It's a lot of deep inner work. And so I'd say get crystal clear about what is authentic for you, not what you aspire to be, not what you think you should be or what you should love. It's like, know what's authentic to you. And that could be affluence, right? Like you could want to make a lot of money, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You could love design and beauty and like want a beautiful home or care about the way that you dress, things like that. Like there's nothing wrong with that. And so get really clear about what it is for you. And if you can do that and start taking actions that follow and get you more in alignment, you're on the right path for you.
Oh, love it. All right. This has been awesome. Anna, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story and sharing your perspective.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful.
Thanks so much for listening. My mission is to help you take control of your finances and build the life you envision. If you'd like to see how financial planning can support your goals, visit allvetfinancial.com and click the Book Now button to schedule a free intro call. Until next time, take care and continue your path to financial success. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered individualized financial advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, it should not be considered a recommendation or endorsement to buy or sell the investment. All investments involve risk. Past performance does not guarantee future results. You are encouraged to seek the advice of a financial professional before implementing any investment strategies discussed. Yay compliance.